for September 11th, 2006. It's the Lullabot Podcast. Lullabot Podcast. Well, hello, I'm Jeff Robbins, and I've got on the line with me...
Angie Byrne.
And...
Robert Douglas.
Yes, we did it. Well, we're going to talk about the Summer of Code project. We're very involved in that. Drupal's involvement with the Summer of Code last year, correct?
That's right.
And Angie, you were a Summer of Code student last year, correct?
Yep.
Cool. So we're going to sort of go through the list of projects and talk about them. We should also mention at the top of the show that Lullabot's doing a week of training in October. If you go to lullabot.com/training, we're doing a two-day workshop on theming and a three-day workshop on the Drupal API. Basically, how to make a module, right?
Yep, and how to make a couple modules, actually. So we'll take you through kind of if you're a kind of a beginner, you know PHP, but you're kind of a beginner to Drupal. Drupal. Ah! There's only 180 ways to pronounce that. Then we'll take you through developing everything from like a kind of a basic module to show you the ropes to everything up to like using hook form alter and some of the really powerful tools that Drupal has available. So it'll be a good time.
Yeah, and two of the days will be devoted just to the form API, right?
Something like that. Yeah. Oh, and also we'll show you some of the stuff you're going to need to know to develop for Drupal 5.0. So
yeah, oh, the new version. Yes, yep. How to sort of update and update other people's old crummy modules and make them new crummy modules.
But that at least work, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, great. It's tips and tricks and a week of exciting time with the Lullabot team. Well, let's get right into the Summer of Code stuff. First off, Robert, you did interviews with some of the Summer of Code students as well, right?
That's right. I'm calling all these people up and getting them on the phone and asking them how it was. And, you know, it's great. It's really fun for me to talk to these students. They're really interesting and engaging people, and one of the things that is coming out of that as these interviews are going on is that Summer of Code is just the best thing for students because it brings them into this open source project in a way that wouldn't have been possible otherwise. So besides this great code that we're going to talk about in just a second, it's really important through these interviews to hear how enthusiastic and how engaged these students are, because that's really the heart of gold here for Summer of Code is, you know, getting people and involving them with open source.
Awesome. That's great. So what we'll probably do is do some little mini podcasts of those, just the interviews. But for this podcast, we're going to go through and just sort of give an overview of all the different Summer of Code projects and sort of status update on them and that kind of thing. So let's just dive right in with the first one that we have on the list here, which is the content recommendation engine. What is that and what does it do?
Yeah, that project was done by Scott Reynolds. And what it does is it takes the the voting API and the data that's come in from the different voting modules, say simple vote or medium vote, and it analyzes that data and finds out, it generates an idea of what people would like to see next, possibly, maybe. And when you're looking at some content on a website, then it looks to all that data in the voting API, and then it says, hey, you might also be interested in so-and-so or whatever. And you're familiar with this functionality from sites like Amazon.com and sites like YouTube that recommend the next video you want to watch. And this module basically does the same thing for Drupal content. And it works really well. I've tested it out. It's highly polished. And it's ready to go. It's based on the Slope 1 algorithm, if anybody's familiar with that, which is the leading thinking, academic research thinking behind how to recommend content to people visiting websites.
So how does it recommend content? I mean, do you have to put in keywords or does it just...
It does it automatically based on votes. So once again, it's absolutely dependent on the voting API being installed and you having used it on your site. So your site visitors have voted on things, whether it's a site like Dig, where they just say, I dig it or I don't, or it's a star ranking system, 1 through 5 stars, whatever. It'll take that data and analyze it and link you to content that deems appropriate or interesting to you, or it also recommends users.
It sort of judges the type of people that like this also like this.
Yeah, like that. And the more people who vote and the more they vote, the more accurate it gets in detecting your preferences.
Wow,
it's
cool.
It's also a developer's API, so you can integrate recommendations into your own modules. But the module itself provides a series of blocks and some pages that you can use to show recommendations right out of the box without any further developing or programming.
Cool. And that it's like ready to go.
That's absolutely ready to go, which brings me to an important point about all of these projects. The way Summer of Code worked was that the students, they wrote proposals and they told us about things that they'd like to create for Drupal and how they planned on doing it. And all 30 of the mentors, looked at these proposals and we ranked them and we discussed them and we gave them points. And in a very difficult process, we decided which ones we would actually be able to accept of the 14 slots that we got. And then the students started implementing what they proposed. And one of the first things we did with the mentors was to make a set of deliverables, a set of criteria by which they would be judged at the end of the summer to see if they had actually completed the project. And out of the 14 students that we got accepted, 13 met the list of criteria that we set out at the beginning of the summer and completed all their tasks, so to speak. And even though they've completed all these tasks, some of the code that we're looking at is what I would call beta code. It does everything that it said it was supposed to do at the beginning of the summer, but there are sometimes issues like it doesn't install perfectly the first time, or it's not clear exactly where to go when you first power it up. And little details, usability details especially, that now have to be ironed out in the coming months before we could call this production code. So that's just a general comment to Summer of Code projects, and that's perfectly fine, and that's the way software works, and it's wonderful. But Scott's content recommendation engine is one of the exceptions to that rule. His code's ready to go right now, so you can go out and use it.
Very cool. And these modules are written all for 4.7, is that true, or were they written for Head, which we can now refer to as 5.0?
No, that would have really been possible to do because this 5.0 version of Drupal that we have now wasn't available at the beginning of Summer of Code. So one of the instructions that Angie and I gave to the students were to develop against 4.7. Despite that, and this is something I want to correct or have corrected soon, a lot of these modules exist in the CVS head branch and still need to be tagged for 4.7. So that's something we're going to work on.
But tagging it for 4.7 implies that it's like kind of ready to go.
Ready to go, yeah.
we can probably just clarify this for people who are still figuring out exactly how the Drupal CVS works, but at least the way I see it, is that the CVS branch, the head branch, is basically just sort of a no man's land of, like, you know, theoretically compatible with the head version of Drupal, you know, the whatever the next version of Drupal is, but not necessarily. They could just have been abandoned at some time, or they might be the same version that was in 4.7 or 4.6 or something like that. But basically, once you know, or it's the development version of these modules, and then once they're kind of like stable and ready to go, people tend to branch them, tag them. I don't remember how that works. They tag them for 4.7 or 4.6, and then they're theoretically good to go. But that's sort of the concept, at least.
And then they'll show up on the module list as well when you go to downloads. So that's why if you don't see these projects, when you go to the downloads link at Drupal.org, there's a little drop down at the top that asks you which version you're referring to, and either switch that to all versions or switch it to CVS, and you'll see a lot of these that way.
There you go.
Or you can visit Drupal.org node 78942, and that is a list of all the projects and where to get information on how to install them and where the projects are found.
Oh, cool.
Even better.
Cool. Well, let's move along. The next one on our list is the import-export API.
So this is a module that Jeremy Epstein wrote, which is quite cool. There's a bunch of import and export modules, like there's user import, taxonomy import, node import, and stuff like that. And what Jeremy set out to do with this module was kind of abstract that out so that it's more defining how things can be imported and exported. And it applies to pretty much anything in the system. So there's nodes, taxonomy, profile fields, I believe is one, users, and you can export them as CSV files, you can export them as XML and import them back the same way. Where this could be really useful is if you're you have a test site locally that you're working on and making some changes to it, and you want to deploy that up to a production site, but you don't want to take all your messy test data with it. You could use this to selectively move things back and forth between the sites. And as this gets fleshed out more, I think he even has support for CCK and all kinds of different things.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's definitely a really cool module to check out. And,
so, right. That's a thing that's sort of been missing from CCK was at once you create all your CCK node types on your test environment, you have to go over and recreate them from scratch again on your
right
server.
Which is
unlike
tedious, especially if you have more than a couple fields. So.
Right, unlike views, which is sort of the same concept in that you kind of create everything through the user interface as opposed to programmatically. But views has an export function so that you can just copy and paste a view over to your live site, but CCK doesn't have that. So,
and the nice thing about this is Vue's exports in its own way, and you know, like it exports as PHP code more or less, and other things export in their own way. And this sort of standardizes everything, so everything either gets exported and imported as XML or CSV or whatever. So, yeah, it's a great module. Another one of those exceptions to the rule that really came out really, really nice. And not to belittle like the other students who didn't quite get theirs as polished, but because the important thing is once this code is written, anybody can take it and extend it and improve it. And so the hardest part is getting the code out there, and they've done the hardest part. So it's just a matter of maintaining it now.
Right,
so.
Getting that core functionality working, and then the rest of it sort of icing on the cake.
Yep.
Or in this case, yeah, making it so that you can get to the cake to ice it. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
just because usability wise, some of these are just sort of difficult to figure out what's going on with them and stuff like that. But hopefully that'll improve a lot in the next short amount of time. So let's keep moving along. The automated unit testing is another project that we've got here.
This is, in fact, a potentially very, very important project for Drupal. This was done by a student named Rock Schlender. And what Rock has done is he's built on the simple test module that came out of Summer of Code 2005, Thomas Ilsch's work. And he built upon that and automated the running of the tests. So what we've got here is we've got a number of tests in the simple test module that they do a sanity check on the Drupal system and make sure things are working. So they create some nodes, they register a user, and basically do a whole bunch of things that you would expect your Drupal site to be able to do. And then you can take a patch, and a patch is what the developers submit. It's a file that that lists all of the differences between the existing code and what they've done to change that code. And they can take that patch, that file, and they can upload it to the automated testing site. And the automated testing site that Rock has created will get a fresh copy of Drupal, and it will install it. It will apply the patch, and then it will run all of the tests. So basically, it will check several things. It will check whether or not the patch applies, which is a very important consideration if sometimes patches fall out of date and they don't apply any longer. And then it will check and see whether the patch breaks certain things. And the reason I say that this is a potentially important function for Drupal is that we spend a lot of time currently applying these patches manually and doing this testing manually. And as humans, we don't have enough time or enough discipline to do all the possible tests every time. So sometimes it's a little hit or miss with a patch. Sometimes you take a patch and apply it and test a little bit, and you know, maybe 5 of the 16 functions that are important, and they work, and you just forget about the rest, and you think, oh, this patch is great, and only later down the road does an error turn up that this patch introduces.
Wow.
And Rock's system holds the promise of minimizing that, so that, first of all, the core committers like Dries and Steven and Gerhard and Neil, they don't ever have to touch a patch that doesn't apply because this system has already identified those patches. And second of all, they don't ever have to touch a patch that doesn't pass all the tests, that obviously breaks something because, well, it's broken, so why should they bother? So it's an efficiency matter for them, and it's also a way that we can raise the overall quality of code in general in Drupal, and it can also apply to contributed modules. So and it works. It's ready to go, and it's really fantastic. I'm a big
fan.
That
is. That's really amazing. I mean, especially for, like, testing out patches that do things like, I don't know, modify the way the installer works or something like that, where essentially you need to install Drupal 18 times in order to really test it, you know? And so you need to install, then uninstall, then get it, you know, then reinstall and uninstall and stuff like that. And this could kind of save a lot of that trouble if it basically gets a fresh copy of Drupal each time.
Right. Another point about this is that it would be fantastically useful for companies who do Drupal development for their clients. And oftentimes when you do a client site, you keep a test site where you do development on it. And I can see the quality of your client work going up dramatically if you maintain your own patches, if you change any modules or even Drupal itself. If you could have this automated test suite check and see whether everything works as you make more changes, then you're less likely to introduce a change to your client's website that breaks something down the road. And any developer who's worked professionally is probably familiar with the call that says, you know, I just went to my site today and this isn't working. All of a sudden, do you know what's happening? And even though you play dumb on the phone, you do know what happened. You broke it. This could help you avoid that.
Oh. It was a late night. I thought it was working right. Yes.
I thought I tested it.
Cool. The next on our list is the Node Profile module. Does that
sure.
make a profile? Is a user profile is a node? Yes?
Well,
no? This... It profiles nodes? What exactly does it do?
I don't node. No, actually, I do know what this does because I've tested it a lot, and it's actually a fantastic collection of modules that were written by a student named Wolfgang Ziegler, And it's kind of crazy. Wolfgang is one of those types of coders who just goes super fast and programs as easy as you or I, you know, comb our hair or whatever. I don't know. He ended up writing 5 complete modules as part of his Summer of Code project, and at the same time addressing or solving some of the most difficult problems in Drupal development. Okay, so what does it do? First of all, the goal of his project was to be able to take the current profile system in Drupal and replace it with profiles that are nodes. Okay, what does that mean? The current profiles in Drupal are just fields that are arbitrarily tacked on to your user, records, and you can, if you've used the system, then you know you can say, yeah, I want a text field that says, you know, this is my, these are my interests, and then I want some radio buttons that says I'm male or female, and whatever. And it's very similar to the functionality you'd find in CCK, where you build a form out of different fields of different types. And Wolfgang thought, hey, you know, if we've got this form building functionality in profiles and we've got this form building functionality in CCK, why don't we combine that and say that, say, CCK nodes could be your profiles? So he did that, and that was the first thing. And that was so easy for him that he went on and did some other things. Like he decided that, oh, you know, I would really like to have views integration with these profile fields and with my user information so that I could say, you know, so that I could create views with the views module based on all this information. But the current system doesn't really let me do that, so what am I going to do? Ah, I know, I'll make users into nodes. So here's the endless perpetual discussion that you might be
familiar with. So now the user becomes a node instead
of...
Yeah,
kind of. The user actually gets a node that is like a singleton node for each user.
Right.
And it inherits
the
properties.
Oh, okay. So this is different from just using CCK fields for the profile. This is actually creating a node that each user gets, a single node.
Correct.
Right.
This creates the user node module creates a node that's it's own node type. It's not a CCK node for each user, and then lets you define other node types as profile nodes. So you can make some CCK nodes, or you could use blog nodes or whatever, image nodes. It doesn't matter. You can say that this is part of my user profile, and you build this relationship between your user node and these other nodes. And then Wolfgang thought, well, you know, this creates a usability nightmare because I'm going to have to, you know, take my user node, and from there I'm going to have to create an image node to have an image, and then I'm going to have to create, you know, my interests node from CCK to specify what my interests are. It'd just be much easier if I could go through all of those all at once and fill them all out. So he wrote this module called the page root module, which solves the 4.7 problem of a wizard, a form wizard, where you have different pages of form information that all belong together in a certain order. And he solved that problem as well. So, well, okay. So he's a coding ninja, Wolfgang Ziegler, and we're really happy he came to Drupal.
That's amazing. Wow. That's all under this one project.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing. Are we good to move on? Have we covered that whole bit?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's move on to social network analysis.
Right. So this one is by Aaron Novak, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, and probably not. Sorry. This is, to be honest, this module goes way over my head because it involves all this really super complicated math. But essentially what it does is it shows you like a graph or a picture of what your community looks like. So it draws this based on the way users interact with one another and the way they interact on the same content with one another and things like that. So what it essentially does is sort of... Well, it analyzes the social network on your website now. But
so
if you go
So is it just based on like comments and stuff, or is it based on buddy lists, or?
Right now I think it's based on nodes and comments. So like if you, like if I create a node and I, you know, say, hey, how's it going? And then someone responds to that node with a comment and someone else responds to that node. And then if I create another node and that same person responds to my node again, we've created a strong bond with one another because we are always discussing stuff on the same types of topics.
Right, so it's
sort of like the content recommendation engine in a way, but it's more from a higher level and showing you how your users map to one another and where the strongest links are and who's getting left out and that kind of stuff.
So,
the best place to go for information on this module is sna.drupaler, which is drupaler.net. He has an entire like demo portion that you can take a look at. He also, that's where he's written all his notes as he's gone through Summer of Code and stuff like that. So it's very interesting. He's implemented some very like high flutin' maths there now, don't you know? Like very complicated stuff, but it's quite cool what it can do. He ran a sample, or I gave him some sample data from the Planet Summer of Code site that we had up for the Summer of Code students, and he was able to draw a map that showed how, you know, where people were interacting and things like that, and it was quite cool to see.
And Big surprise, everybody knows WebChick.
Yeah, everybody knows WebChick.
WebChick was at the center of the graph.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. It was like this huge hairy spider and WebChick in the middle. But it's definitely worth checking out if you need that type of functionality in your site.
So what is the output of it? It outputs these images?
It outputs them in the format's text, but it's parsed by like a Java applet that renders the graphs, and you can do like, I don't know if you've seen those types of maps where like there's different, they call them nodes or whatever, but basically there's little circles on the map, and then you can zoom in on them to see where they connect with other ones. And cool little like magnifying glass zoomy tool thing that he's got going on.
Oh wow. So that's even better than an image because it's sort of,
yeah, it's interactive and everything, but it can also generate still images if you just want a picture of it, or you can like do everything. The CVS version of the module, the one that you download from Drupal.org, doesn't have the cool JavaScript Java browsing tools, because those aren't GPL'd, so they can't be distributed. But if you go to his site, he's got it there that you can download.
So. Cool. And hopefully there'll be instructions on how to get that Java stuff so you can make it work with it. Yes.
Yeah. It's a little complex. It's, you know, still could use a little bit of improvement in the making it easy to install type of thing. But once you've got it installed, it's quite powerful.
Cool. Great. All right. The next one we've got here is called GData. Robert, you want to tell us about GData?
Yeah, GData stands for Google Data, because it's something that Google invented. And it's...
Are you saying Google invented data?
Google wants to pawn your data. No, the GData specification is something relatively new that came out of the wonderful Mind Labs of Google. And what they want to do is they want to take syndication standards like RSS and Atom and use these as a way of moving highly structured data between websites and complete with versioning and being able to edit and delete it and stuff like that. It's basically a different way of interacting with a server than we're used to. And it's based on the HTTP protocol. And it brings into play not only the post and get requests with which we're all familiar, but also the put and delete requests, which were around since the beginning of the HTTP protocol, but are not commonly used. So Summit Data, the student who implemented this module, has done a really good job of analyzing what's available with this new specification and making heads and tails of it. One of the biggest problems that the project poses is that Google hasn't provided a lot of guidance in terms of what you're actually supposed to do with it. So what you can do with it now is you're able to basically export your site content to a different site, and both the client site and the server site, so to speak, would have to have this module installed, and then they'd be able to talk together using this protocol, the GData protocol. And you'd be able to, say, push a node from one of the sites to the other site and then edit it and delete it. So it's basically a different XML RPC protocol that Google's come up with that's based on the Atom and RSS standards. And
that's interesting. It sounds like one of those things that the rest of us aren't going to quite understand for 6 months. And then all of a sudden we'll say, oh, I see what you can do with it. And there it will be. But for the time being, you can do some really interesting sort of remote access kind of things and import and export kind of stuff with it. Yes?
Yeah.
Is it as polished as, I mean, because Drupal also has the import-export modules, right? Just publish and subscribe modules, excuse me, which are sort of similar to that, and they're kind of polished and
right,
stuff.
They're based on the XML RPC protocol, the
right.
Publish and subscribe.
Right, and does this provide any advantages over that?
Well, that remains to be seen. In theory, yes, it can. These specifications have a lot of room for cool features like versioning and remote editing and deletion and stuff like that. Not all of that's implemented in Summit's project, and his code is definitely beta code that he's still working on and he's dedicated to improving. It's really up to the community at large and other entities and Google to decide what the best way to use this protocol is. But the fact that we've got that now in Drupal is really helpful, and people can start putting their brains together and seeing what we can do with it. It also defines a hook structure so that developers can add GData hooks to their modules that open up the functionality of that module to remote clients via the GData protocol and stuff like that.
Wow, cool stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's good to keep up with Google because likely they're working on this as an adjunct to something else that they're going to unveil, and all of a sudden they'll say, and you can interact with it with GData. And ta-da, all of a sudden Drupal can do that. That's great. Let's talk about the Views Scheduler. What is the Views Scheduler? That's something that works
with
Views module?
Yeah, essentially what it does is it lets you take a view. Like, for example, if you had a view that showed the top 5 rated nodes or something like that, you could use that to schedule when the content of that view should change. So it's essentially using the same type of deal as a scheduler module, but it's applying it to views instead. A couple of caveats with this module is it relies on the schedule module, not scheduler module, one of those. the schedule module is only a 4.6 module.
There should be someone out there that to actually monitor the
modules, really, and
module names, because I saw someone recently posted a new module called User Node, not to be confused with the User Nodes module. And then there's the schedule and the scheduler module and the subscription and subscriptions module and stuff like that. That just, it's like, ugh. And you don't know.
And
which
there's a whole mess of voting, node vote, node review, voting API.
Well,
yes,
and we should mention quickly that Angie recently wrote a roundup, did a node voting roundup article on the Lullabot site. So you can find that at lullabot.com.
Yeah, so that's very much on my brain right now is voting stuff. So when you go to install this, you're going to see that schedule module doesn't come with an install file and still uses form underscore stuff, and you're like, hey, I can't use this. I have 4.7 site. Whoa, you're freaking me out, man. But the view scheduler module doesn't use anything forms-wise from that module. It just uses the cron stuff, so it's okay to use with it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
An interesting point about the view scheduler is that it lets you define a stack of actions from the actions module. And whenever the schedule gets run, you end up with a set of nodes from the view, and every one of those nodes will have all of the actions that are in the action stack executed against that node. So that sounded really complex, but what it boils down to is this. You define a view that collects a set of nodes that you're interested in. Angie's example was the top N nodes, the top five nodes, or the top whatever nodes in the last time period. And then on a schedule, every 2 hours or every Monday or every whenever, the view scheduler will grab that set of nodes and go through all the actions that you defined and do things based on those actions. For example, it'll publish them, or it will unpublish them, or it will send their titles to the email list, or it will put them on the front page, or whatever you want to do.
So you could have it go through the most popular nodes on your site and unpublish them on a regular basis.
Whatever. Exactly.
So you just want to keep it
They're
even.
Too popular. We can't
exactly,
have that. Yeah.
Exactly. My unpopular site. I only want to put up the stuff that's really people don't like. But yes, useful things like that. But okay. So I didn't quite understand that. I thought it basically scheduled a view, like to happen, but I wasn't quite sure how that would be. Like if it, you know, but basically what it can do is it can do actions on the nodes of a view, on a given schedule.
And right. Schedule when those actions take place.
Right. Now you said it does stuff with actions, but if it doesn't use actions, are there other stuff that can happen on the schedule?
No, it requires the actions module.
So it requires the actions module, and it requires the schedule module.
And obviously the views module.
But still, it's an interesting color to have on one's palette.
It definitely would have its uses for different sites.
It's one of those things where you're gonna say, I can't think of a good use for it now, and then down the road you go, Eureka! I have just the solution.
How did
for
I
that
ever
problem.
Live without this module?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
an obvious use case is subscriptions, and people have complained for an eternity that there's no satisfactory subscriptions module. But with this, you could define a view that you're interested in. I'm interested in content that has the taxonomy term technology, and that was written in the last week, and that has 20 or more votes on it. And that's your view. And on a schedule, the view scheduler looks at that and mails you a summary of everything that's in the view. So you've subscribed to a popular technology in the last 2 weeks view.
Right, right. Wow, that's interesting. So, right. Interesting. Well,
we're blowing your mind.
Yeah. See, I knew it was cool. I just couldn't figure out what it was doing exactly. So good to know. Administration Usability Improvements is the title of another one of these Summer of Code projects. What happened with that?
By Mr. Konstantin Kafer from Germany. And this is a guy who just did a great job, in my opinion. He's the second Summer of Code student in history to contribute to Drupal core while he's a Summer of Code student. The first being Stephen Witten's last year with his Ajax-y improvements to Drupal. And coincidentally, Konstantin was also very involved with Drupal and Ajax. One of the things that he did as his Summer of Code work was to contribute to getting jQuery into core. And he was very vocal in doing that and making that happen, and wrote some of the code in the patch that actually went in. So that was his first achievement. The three things that he defined as part of his project that he wanted to achieve were three improvements to the interface of Drupal and the way that people interact with it. The first thing he wanted to do was to make a tree widget, a tree view for data that's in a tree-shaped hierarchy. And the first example that comes to mind is our taxonomy system, where you can have a hierarchy of taxonomy terms, so multiple parent-child relationships. And the way we currently render that in Drupal is in a select box with the appropriate number of minuses in front of the term to represent the hierarchy, so that when you open up the select box, if you have 100 terms on 5 different levels, you go blind because of all the minuses, and you tilt your head from left to right trying to figure out whether an apple is a parent of a tree or whether, you know, this term relates to that term. And it's a mess. It's a really horrible interface that we have right now in Drupal, and I dislike it very much. And Constantine does as well, apparently, because he has successfully created a widget that is, it's one of those things where you click the little plus and it expands and shows everything that's under that level. So you start out with a collapsed view, and you can expand the view on the branches that you're interested in seeing. So it's much easier to use and much easier to find the relationships.
So when you say a widget, do you mean that it's like a CCK widget, or it's a form field, a custom form field, or something else?
I believe it's a custom form field, but I have to double check on that. I don't believe it's a CCK widget.
Right. Cool.
And it's all three of these items that I'm going to discuss are in his CVS sandbox as proof of concept code, and still need to be integrated fully into Drupal and accepted and committed. They're not to use them. You have to go to his sandbox. They're not projects that you find on the modules download page.
Right.
The second improvement that he set out to make and that he achieved was to have a toggle link on things that can be toggled on or off. So what are those things that can be toggled on or off? Node published or node unpublished, on or off. Promoted to the front page, not promoted to the front page, on or off. User status, blocked or active, on or off. And everywhere where you have this option of something just being yes or no, on or off, 0 or 1, he has made it so that instead of checking a checkbox and pressing submit, you're able to simply press click a link and it toggles it. So
meaning it does an Ajax callback, so you don't actually need to hit submit?
Correct.
Wow.
So that would be a usability improvement that would save site administrators the trouble of clicking the submit button at the bottom of the page.
Well, especially things like turning on and off modules and stuff like that. It could be really interesting to be able to have it sort of happen instantaneously.
Mm.
Sort
Absolutely.
Of. Although you probably need a page reload for most modules to sort of do their thing. But kind of neat.
But that would actually happen in the background if it works right.
Yeah.
The third improvement that he successfully implemented was to find a way to edit text inline. What that means is that if you're looking at a Drupal page, and the way it is now, you've got like a view tab and an edit tab, and if you want to look at it, you click the view tab, and if you want to edit it, you click the edit tab. And Constantine figures that's a waste of time and effort, and he's made it so that you can, while looking at the view tab, you can click the text in the text area, and it goes from being in its view state to being in its edit state. So you can click on the text, do your edit, and click outside of the text, and it gets saved.
So basically like an inline editor kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And those are really, really great improvements that I think everybody can probably agree that we want them. And now that he's done them, we can discuss how to get them into core and how to get them integrated and how to best use them. So I'd say at this point, this work is for developers to look at, and I encourage developers to go to Constantine's sandbox, his CVS sandbox, and to try and figure out how you can integrate these improvements into your own modules and possibly integrate them into core as well.
Cool. Really neat. let's talk about the Drupal Manager project.
Okay, this one I'm going to have to wing a little bit because the Drupal Manager is not a module in the traditional sense. It's an XPI or Firefox extension. However, you need Windows in order to build it, and Parallels isn't cooperating with me right now. So he also has a test site up for this module, but it doesn't appear to be working right at the moment. So I'll just kind of talk generally about it because I did test it a couple weeks ago. Basically, what this module does is lets you, from a desktop application, maintain your Drupal site. So you can add nodes, you can delete nodes, you can futz around with taxonomy and that kind of thing. Not every single feature of Drupal is implemented in this system yet, but it's really handy for users that aren't comfortable going through the web interface and are more comfortable with a desktop application to be able to maintain Drupal that way. I believe it also has multi-site support, so you can maintain multiple Drupal installations from a single place, which is also really nice to be able to do.
Huh. That's kind of cool. It's also kind of cool because it's a desktop application and gets and could conceivably be contributed to all the, you know, free download software website kind of things and stuff, and it sort of gets the Drupal name out there and people
definitely
can see
right.
that.
It's
first.
Written in XML user interface language XUL from Mozilla.org, and
right.
you can run it using XUL Runner. So you don't need to run it as a Firefox extension. You can get XUL Runner as well.
Cool. I'm going to talk about the next one a little bit. The next one that we have on the list is the Ajax Form Creator. And it was a project of Avi Mehta from India. It's really interesting. For those of us who've struggled with just trying to put together the array correctly for making forms, this module uses some fancy JavaScript and Ajax callback kind of stuff to basically allow you to do that through drag and drop kind of stuff. So basically, there's some – I'm trying to remember the names of them, but if you do a Google search for form creator, form builder, or something like that. There's a few sites out there that do this kind of thing for HTML. But this one builds Drupal form arrays. And so it's really nice to have a graphic user interface for creating these form arrays. It remembers to put in the title or the type or that kind of thing that you might otherwise forget sometimes. Make sure that everything is spelled all the right way. Tittle, tittle is not going to show you a title. And it's really cool. And it's starting to branch out into other things. I mean, eventually it could be the basis for, creating CCK, nodes, CCK, you know, use it with the CCK fields, and already it's starting to get into being able to alter existing forms. So you could basically load up, I don't know, give me a form example, you know, of a page, node page, page type node. You could load in that form and rearrange it so that the title of that is down the bottom, or the title is suppressed so that it doesn't show, or something like that. And then eventually, with the form alter function, that would be the form that you would get when you went to the creator, edit a node, a page node.
Very cool.
I think I sort of stumbled through that, but I think I essentially got the concept out. I mean, and again, this one also a little bit is kind of tricky to get installed and figure out where to go to do the right things with it and stuff like that. But it's definitely getting there. And if other people are excited about it, there's a project for it, you should submit some patches and stuff like that, and we can get it into shape. So it's good stuff. What do we have next? Gradebook. You want to hit this one, Angie?
Yeah, Gradebook is another one that doesn't seem to be working right at the moment, but this is a powerful set of tools. It's basically breaking Drupal into the whole e-learning portion of or kind of the e-learning, what do you want to call it, demographic
crowd.
Crowd, yeah. it's able to, it not only defines like a gradebook, which is a way of like organizing nodes in a way that you can instantly see like the scores of assignments and things like that, but it also defines an API where you can have external modules plug into this. So ideally, the quiz module would be retooled to work with the gradebook module. So when someone takes a quiz, it instantly puts a record of it in the gradebook. So there's one place for that kind of thing.
Yeah, the cool. student's name is Robert Voleb, or Voleb. I don't know where he lives. So if he's German, it would be Voleb, but it looks like he's from the United States. So it's Robert Voleb.
Yeah.
Sorry, Robert.
The beauty of international.
Sorry for butchering your name there, man. Yeah. There's a actually for all of these, just about on groups.drupal.org, there are groups for almost or every single one of these projects. Where you can go there to look at kind of, you know, the progress of the thing as it went along, and also taking suggestions on future directions and things like that. It's a useful place to go for information about all these modules. But unfortunately, right now, when I try to install it, I get SQL errors, so I'm submitting a bug right now about that.
Let's talk about the collaborative editor. This one's really exciting to me, although I've tried to install it a couple times and couldn't get it to work at all. But I guess there was a test site that one or both of you tested it out on. I don't think I got the test site to work either. But it's a neat idea where basically multiple people can edit the same thing at the same time in real time. And I don't even know quite how the interface would work because I haven't seen it. You want to talk a little bit about this, Robert?
Sure. The student's name is Ernest Delgado. He's from Spain. And the way that it was originally supposed to work was with a technology called Comet. But this Comet technology turned out to be very server specific, and you had to install a lot of stuff. And it itself is in beta or alpha or early stages of development. So instead, they just decided to use straightforward Ajax to do it. And what you see is you get like a form for content, page, blog, whatever, and you start editing it. You type in some text, and if you have a partner or if there's somebody else who also has that form for that content open at the same time, they see the changes that you're making as you're making them, or with a very short delay. And if they make changes, then you see the changes that they're making. So basically, it could be a way to collaboratively edit or collaboratively author content. It works pretty well. There are a lot of really difficult technical issues involved with doing something like this. For example, what if somebody makes an edit? What if both people make an edit and at the same time, basically? How does the system negotiate and navigate this issue of concurrency? And that's really what Ernest did a lot of work on, is detecting collisions where people are editing at the same time and how to resolve them and so forth. But the proof of concept is that two or more people can type in to the text field and their text shows up, all of it together in the order that they typed it. And it basically works. So if there are any really smart concurrency geniuses out there who are interested in this stuff, jump onto the groups.drupal.org project page for this, for the collaborative editor, and lend your support. This is one of the ones where it's probably not production ready, but a lot of the important groundwork has been laid.
Cool. Yeah, really neat stuff. I mean, I would love to see that working. That's something that we could use on the podcast for sort of putting together the list of things we're going to talk about, stuff like that. Just sort of have everybody kind of dive in and add stuff to the list as we go along and stuff like that.
There would be a neat module building tool. Get a bunch of really smart people in the same room and throw them on that thing and have them make a module in real time. And
yeah, like Sabitha Edit or other things like that. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Let's see. Drew Text.
Drew Text. What that is it's a module that, if you're familiar with LaTeX, I believe is how you pronounce it. It looks like latex, but it's not pronounced that way because that would be dirty. But anyway, it's a means. You know how math? How come I get all the math ones, man? I totally gypped. No, I'm just kidding.
You know you're a math genius.
Oh yeah,
math chick.
math formulas have weird symbols in them, like the big E with. That probably means something really.
Sum.
Yeah. Sum. There you go. Or square root squared. Symbol. Or x squared or things like this.
Derivative.
Derivative. Calculus. Invisible, imaginary numbers or something. But it lets you define special little characters to stick in there, and then it will convert them into these symbols. So it makes it possible for people to run scientific blogs or math geek blogs and things like that, as well as like writing documentation that requires this sort of notation. And that one is kind of cool because it opens Drupal up to the scientific community a bit more. So it makes it a platform that they could actually use for this kind of thing, because that's not having that type of notation in a nice content management framework like Drupal is not something that's really been done before, I don't think. So it's kind of a really cool thing. The way it works is it's a filter. So you go into administer input formats and then enable it as a filter or create its own input format for it. And then when you enter text in, it will translate your symbols into their graphic representation. I believe it also supports PDF exporting of nodes. So if you need to export something as an article, you can do that and it will export it in PDF.
Wow, cool. Yeah, so LaTeX is a format for entering these formulas in text.
Exactly. Yep.
Format, right. And so basically this just allows you to enter things in the LaTeX, however you pronounce it, format, and they get converted. That's cool stuff.
It's not only for math, by the way. It can plot charts. It can do chemistry. So
actually music too, can't it? Like
it can do
musical
music.
Notes?
It's basically a generalized system for taking the text that you can type on your keyboard and rendering it to something else that you wouldn't be able to type on your keyboard, such as Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And the fact that we have this in Drupal now opens up the door for the integration of all sorts of specialized LaTeX libraries. There are also libraries for publishing books, for example. So one application of this could possibly be that you take one of these existing libraries for publishing books, like real treeware books, and use this module to author the book on your Drupal site. So you use your Drupal site and then apply these LaTeX filters to it, and it renders it in a way that is ready to go straight to the publisher.
Wow. Craziness. Crazy craziness. Well, and last but not least, the Image Magic project. Robert, you want to talk about this one?
Sure. I did want to mention that the LaTeX module was done by Daniel Gutekunst. Important that we actually link the people to the work they've done.
Yes.
Yes, but do you notice how I don't bother pronouncing the names because you're the only one who can do it?
Well, the Image Magic integration project was attempted by a student named Fani Arava, and it unfortunately didn't get finished, but the idea was going to be that it would allow Drupal to use the Image Magic Library to manipulate images, photographs in particular, or generate them. One of the hoped for uses of this, I know Adrian Russo was really keen on seeing this happen. He wanted this project to enable you to take, say, your Blix theme, the one with the big blue thing at the top, that has the gradient on it, so it starts dark blue at the top and it lightens up as it goes lower. He wanted to make it so that you could change the color of that, and the Image Magic library, integration library, would say, okay, instead of, you know, being a blue gradient, that should be a red gradient or whatever, and the site user would be able to specify the colors and basically theme their site in part by changing the images that are already part of the theme.
Now, what is Drupal use now for image manipulation?
Any one of several libraries that may be available. Defaults to the GD library. There's also, I think, the GD2 library, and you can specify the Image Magic library. But the only functions that are used are resizing images. So the only thing that we do with any of these libraries is to make them smaller.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
Right.
So this is more defining an interface that an end user could use to make the changes to their site without having to do custom programming.
Right.
Well, not just changes to the site, but changes to images. Things that you can do with Image Magic include rotating images or making them black and white or anything basically you can do in Photoshop or GIMP in terms of, you know, applying filters or manipulations to an image, you know, changing the darkness, the brightness, the focus, the blur, Gaussian blur filters, stuff like that, you're able to do with Image Magic. And
it's like Photoshop from the command line.
Photoshop from your Drupal site was the point of this. But it didn't finish. If somebody wants to step up to the bat and finish it, that'd be great. But that was the 14th project, and we only got 13 that finished.
Cool. Well, great. Well, that was a lot to talk about, and Robert, you do have some, and are still doing some interviews with some of the people, and I think what we'll do is just put those out as like little mini podcasts, just the little individual interviews with people talking about their Summer of Code projects, and great.
One other thing I wanted to mention is that a few of the students will be in Brussels presenting their projects. So if you're going to be in Brussels for the DrupalCon, next week, is that next week already? Jeez. Then feel free to stop by. We're, Saturday morning at 10 a.m. We'll have Constantine, we'll have, Aaron Novak, we'll have, Rock Schlender. And we'll also have Shindane Shakur, who did the Vue Scheduler module. So those four will be on hand to show off their stuff. And then we'll probably do a demo of most of the rest, if not the rest of the modules as well. So.
Cool. Great. Well, I'll be there. that's awesome. Well, great. Well, let's call this a podcast, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.